I'm feeling a little anxious, if you know what I mean.
Now, come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all.
N-E-R-D up. N-E-R-D up.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd up.
Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley,
Sam Coker,
Tim Matson.
Listen to that.
Excited to be back on the show.
Wow, yeah, and it's great to have all of us back, with the exception of Isaac. We'd have a full compliment, but he's in his room skulking because I stole his internet to do a podcast.
You,
the life and times.
Awful person.
Terrible human.
Well, I just didn't want any interruption coming and happening because I want to get a good, we've got everybody together again. You know, it's like, you know, going back for your fifth reunion in high school. It's like, okay, everybody's still cool. We know each other, but it's still, let's talk about a few things. So that's what we're going to do today. Talk about a few things.
The real question is, if this is the 5-year reunion, which one of us do you still want to sleep with?
The secret?
I mean, because there's always somebody.
The secret is all of you.
Oh. There's a lot of lovers.
Well, it's always been a, you know, never mind. Well, this what brought us together, actually, to make us and force us to talk was watching you guys post back and forth with your frustrations about Star Trek, this new TV series. And so,
there's a new Star Trek?
You're kidding.
And with all the talk about this, I'm like, you know, this would be a pretty good podcast. And then someone finally chimed in and said, hey, we should record. And so I just threw a time out, and here we are. I love it when a plan comes together. So, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about Star Trek, this Star Trek Discovery. By the way, did you realize the initials are STD?
I did.
Hey, did you catch STD this weekend? I hope not.
I wish I had buyer's remorse.
Well, so we're going to talk about STDs, and then we're going to talk about the Defenders, because we never did get together to talk about that, all of us at once. So we'll kind of give a wrap-up on that. And then I got a little announcement to make at the end of the podcast about something that's happening next year that may or may not get us together somehow, some way, in person. We'll see about that. But in the meantime, let's see here. Okay, first of all, Star Trek Discovery. The only reason this whole show came about, in my opinion, is so that CBS can make a whole bunch of money off of us Star Trek fans by launching a new subscription service, and I'm not paying for it, okay? I mean, I think Star Trek Discovery is going to beat out Game of Thrones. I think someone said this as one of the most pirated shows. One of you guys say that in one of your conversations?
Yeah, I did.
I
think it's going to be absolutely correct because, I mean, seriously, I still don't really want to watch it, but I just don't want to pay for another service. You know, Amazon Prime, Hulu, Netflix. If you can't get on there, why bother?
I guess it depends on what else are you getting on that service. I mean, what other CBS show are you just dying to watch?
Murder, She Wrote.
Another service. The answer is no.
Everyone loves Raymond for the 20th time.
I gotta watch my Jessica.
Yeah.
And Matlock.
I get it. I understand the impetus to put it behind a paywall to force people to pay for a service, but
right.
I just feel like it's going to totally blow up in their faces.
I hope it does.
And I'm not promoting or condoning any of this, but I'm just saying that at this date and time, when digital files are so easily traded and there's leaks on every movie, this was a fool's errand on CBS's part to think that they could pull this off. Now, if there was, you know, some magical technical security that nailed down digital content, which is never going to happen, and it certainly hasn't happened yet, then, okay, maybe they might be able to let all of the Star Trek fans into making a profit off of doing this. But no, people are going to say, well, what do I get for my money? One Star Trek show a week.
Yeah.
And that's just ridiculous. I mean, it's, I think, $5 or $6.95 or $8 somewhere in there. I mean, for $8 or $9 on Netflix, you get a ton of really good, you know, award-winning series. A selection of movies that, you know, is varying.
Yeah.
And of course, all those classic TV shows. So you're, you know, if there's one thing on Netflix that you want to see, you're still getting a ton of other stuff for your money.
Yeah.
What are you getting from CBS for your subscription? You know,
well, you know what they should have done? If they should have let everybody have it for free as a trial offer. Say, here, Star Trek's for free. Enjoy it. Let us know what you think. We'll be adding more original content later. Right now, this is all we got. If they'd have done that, I think it might have been a little more successful.
Or here's an idea. This is something they've been doing on online, on websites for a long time, is they air it on CBS on a weekly basis with mm-hmm. commercials, but they offer at the beginning of the season that if you subscribe, you have instant access to all the episodes of the season like Netflix does.
Yeah.
So think about that. That would still encourage a lot of people that, you know, are real hardcore nerds and they want it all right now without commercials. And that would be a fair thing for them to do. And honestly, if they expect the show to continue, that's what it's going to have to morph into or something like that.
Well, weren't they supposed to throw the first episode on like regular broadcast CBS?
Oh, they did.
Oh, they did? Oh,
yeah,
I missed
they did.
Darn.
it was on Sunday night on CBS. Yeah. Oh,
okay, I missed it. Well, then
That's really odd. I'm very surprised that they would bother to do that because I just think that the audience that watches CBS, I mean, let's be real, it's an older audience.
Yeah.
And they're not going to understand why Star Trek isn't on the following week.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that none of the Star Trek syndication ever, ever airs on CBS. Yeah.
The audience isn't there for it. Yeah. I think if they had done, my opinion, if they'd have done it for free, you know, and then said, you know, we got more to come, another season, I think that would have locked some people in maybe. Right now, though, I see no reason for me to do it. But you guys caught the CBS broadcast. I missed that altogether. I knew they were supposed to.
And here's another option that we haven't discussed that the studios do all the time. ABC, NBC, Fox, and I assume CBS does it too. I'm sure I've seen CBS films as a leader going into some films that I've seen, theatrical films. And also on cable, they all, you know, so there's not, it's no longer such a hermetically sealed world. The television networks, ABC has investments in cable projects. You know, there's a lot of mixing of this. So, I mean, CBS didn't have to do this. If they wanted to go the paywall route, I guarantee one of these pay services that has some sort of affiliation with them. Or if not, they could have developed one because Star Trek does pulls a lot of water. It has a lot of leverage. Mm-hmm. They could have taken this to any one of these services and said, hey, pay us this much money. We'll add this to your catalog. And everyone would have been happy. But they got very, very greedy, in my opinion.
That's to me what it boils down to. So, all right, well, let's talk about the show itself. It's now you guys have seen, you guys luckily knew that it was going to be on Sunday. I missed that altogether. I'm not really that bummed though. who all did get to see it? Who all has seen at least the first episode?
I think all three of
us. Oh man, yeah. I feel left out now. all right. Well, let's start out with Tim Matson. We haven't heard from you in a long time. What'd you think of the initial episode?
I think really, to be honest, everything I feel about the series can be summed up in the opening credits and theme song. It's incredibly bland. The theme song is really disappointing up until you get that slight return of the Star Trek theme towards the end of the credits. And that's when you start to get those little goosebumps. Other than that, it's entirely forgettable. The theme is just really, really disappointing. The graphics of it are lovely, but the music is just really poorly thought out. It's very, very bland.
It's CBS music.
I feel
music.
Like that the it kind of it, I mean yeah I mean it's just generic TV show music, which is a shame because the Star Trek theme is an iconic theme song,
right?
And I feel like you could do a variation on that and make another iconic song,
right?
But unfortunately, it's just really bland. And I feel like the problem with this is that they tried to do the entire first season of Star Trek Discovery in two episodes.
Oh, wow.
Because that, well, it's so correct. Much happens. Do we want to get into spoilers? Are we going to spoil this? Or
got no problem.
I think we have to. Okay. In order to really discuss this, we've really got to spoil.
All right. Well, then let's just deal with what I feel like is the biggest disappointment for me is Michelle Yeoh being offed at the end of the second episode.
Yeah.
And I don't feel anything about that because I barely knew her character.
Well, honestly, she didn't have a character.
It was pretty, like the theme song, pretty bland. It was very, very bland.
Why would you even hire Michelle Yeoh if you're not even going to put her, have her kick ass in one fight scene? You know? Why?
Well, I mean, she sort of did. I mean, but that was pretty weak, too. And that was, you know, in the original series, in every Star Trek series, the only people that beam onto a mission are the main characters and then a couple of red shirts. In this, they didn't even bother to go through the motions of sending anybody else. They sent the captain and the first officer to a hostile Klingon ship to fight off the Klingons and capture a prisoner. I just was scratching my head. It's like, I don't understand this. I don't understand. I thought the writing was sloppy, poorly conceived. There were so many little nitpicks, like the fact that the hologram of Sarek, when he is a hologram on the Enterprise talking to Michael, he sits down on a desk.
Yeah.
I mean, just little nitpicky things like that. I'm looking at this, I'm like, who didn't look at this and go, holograms can't sit down? What is this?
He just happened to have a desk in his own house in the exact same location.
Exactly. I'm like, do they have like an exact replica of this room where he can like hologram into? I don't get it. It's just so many silly things. They have a transporter. Why at the beginning of this are they walking forever to find this well and are lost?
Oh my god, right?
They have a transporter. Why?
And then she walks a brand manual perfect Starfleet insignia in the desert.
They're worried about being stuck there for a decade, and you know she's being clever with I didn't make a circle.
I
made a star.
Ugh.
I mean, there's so much ugh.
You're giving that performance way too much credit. I think worry didn't really cut it. I think maybe mild concern.
Yeah, that I've never seen such wooden performances in all my life.
Mild concern that we might be trapped here for 85 years. I could die. It's Tuesday.
All right. Well,
how did they spot that lovely sand crafted thing that she made? Did someone look at the port of the Enterprise and spot it? I mean, I don't get it. How did that help them?
Well, right, because there was all that, like, wasn't there a lot of stuff going on in the atmosphere that was like, oh, yeah, I know, so you're not going to be able to see any, I don't know.
They clearly couldn't see two dark figures against light-colored sand, but they could see some tracks in that light-colored sand. No problem.
Yeah.
Never
mind. I don't know. You could go on and on about how little.
Really, I could. I mean, I would be monopolizing, but I need to turn it over to my esteemed colleagues.
Before we turn it over to, I'm going to go with Tim Coker next. But before we do, all right, again, I didn't get to see it because, again, no desire, so I really didn't pay much attention. This is, okay, how's this relate with the rest of the Star Trek universe? Okay, I understand Next Generation was like, 25th century, or blah, 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 you know, years ahead, and then all this other good stuff. Deep Space Nine was at about the same time as Next Generation. Voyager was at the same time, but a different quadrant. Enterprise was before Captain Kirk. Where does this one come in?
This is after Enterprise, and just to give you a frame of reference, they go from never seen a Klingon in 100 years to we're at war with a United Klingon nation and I don't ever want to hear another Klingon word the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh.
Jeez.
All right. Well, I'm looking here at the IMDb page and I see some of the cast members and I see Harry Mudd is coming up. Rainn Wilson is going to be playing him, or did he already?
Not yet.
No, it's coming.
Yeah, okay. Next episode, I think.
But I always liked Harry Mudd's character in the animated series and the original Star Trek, so that'd be,
Could be good.
All right, well, Tim,
but, but after this weak sauce beginning, a Harry Mudd is not going to take the series anywhere.
Oh,
and
man.
Lest I leave you thinking that I absolutely detest this, I don't. I think it shows a lot of heart. There's a lot of emotion about being on the edge of the universe and that human urge to discover and be out there on the frontier. There's a lot of, you know, joy in space exploration, and they capture that really well in bits and pieces. And there are good performances here and there. Doug Jones as the alien science officer. He's a real standout.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. And the lead actress, I think, that plays Michael Bennett, but I don't remember her last
Burnham,
name.
Burnham, something like that.
Burnham? I don't know.
I think. And something like
Burn them all.
I think she shows promise. I think she shows promise. I think, to be honest, it takes a lot of guts to play a lead character that you don't really like all that much to begin with.
All right. Well, all right, Tim Coker, let's hear your opinion. What do you got to say about it?
Well, you know, I would say I'm not a Trekker, but I'm a Trekkie. And what I mean by that is I'm not so into it that I have to be precious about it. Like, I'm quite content to be a Trekkie, and the hell with anybody that wants to use that as a pejorative term. I don't even care. They probably like football, right? So, you know, but I love Star Trek. I love, you know, I'm not monogamous. I love all kinds of things, but I really root for Star Trek. And, you know, my first Star Trek was the animated series. I got into the live action, the original series right after that. I was fairly loyal viewer of the Next Generation. I haven't been able to get into any of the shows since then. And it isn't that I hate them. They weren't really speaking to me at the time. I imagine I'll get around to them at some point. But you know, things have really changed for Star Trek, and I feel like Star Trek went on kind of two different paths, because to me, you know, I think that the paywall idea is stupid, okay? To me, it seems like a really long shot, but some corner suite guy, you know, is really banking on getting a bonus from it, you know? So they have to try, right? So whatever. Star Trek has always been a profit-making proposition for some network or some movie studio or something. So I'm not going to rag on that too much. I think it's wrong-headed, whatever. But, you know, as for what it's about, like, the genius Roddenberry had was he created something that, you know, while it's definitely led by Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, it was an ensemble piece, and it was about ideas. And he found a way to create an ensemble piece about ideas that also delivered, you know, gripping science fiction drama every week. And what happened, so there's kinds of pulls in Star Trek where it's a show about ideas, or it's about Captain Kirk punching Klingons, right? and or whatever.
And kissing chicks of color.
And yes. And yeah. All the colors of the rainbow. But when when they made Star Trek the motion picture, they went all out for ideas and everybody hated it, right? So then the next movie they come in and they make it into an action movie with a revenge-driven villain and kind of standard motivations for the characters. Wrath of Khan is 100% balls. That is a great movie, but we came to take over Star Trek more and more, like in the big public space. So while they kept making TV shows that are ensemble pieces about ideas, which the Next Generation is great at, the movies, like if you look at the Next Generation movies, none of them are ensemble pieces about ideas. They're all action schlock. That is not something that Star Trek does great on a repeatable basis. To me, Wrath of Khan, like even Search for Spock isn't that great. And that was trying to do it right away when you still had all the brains in the building. So when you look at the Abrams movies, those are pure action schlock. And there is nothing in it about ideas. There's nothing in it about challenging your moral point of view. It's all just action schlock and dropping stuff out of the brand manual. Tribbles. Oh, hey, I know what Tribbles are. That's great, you know. So with this show, and I know I'm sorry, this is a really long walk to get to talking about this show, but it really informs how I view it. And to me, this show, A, they lead off with two episodes of action schlock that I did not think was that well executed. Certainly not. To me, it all felt kind of generic TV action. I mean, it looked expensive.
Very much so.
But yeah, there was nothing special about it. And so they threw out the ensemble thing because what we've got is we've got basically these two episodes make the show appear to be 100% about a super boring character. Because Michael is a huge problem for me. I think that the actress is capable, probably.
Probably.
Certainly she's freakishly beautiful, you know, except that she has that little gap in her teeth, which I guess is supposed to make her relatable. But come on.
Let's think. Oh, my God.
No, she looks like a cosmetics model. I mean, she's really distractingly beautiful. And she is super great at everything. She can do the science officer's job better than him. Oh, we need to check that out. I'm going to put on a spacesuit. Then I'm going to go kill a Klingon.
And she's very Mary Sue.
Well, oh, my God. She's the Mary Suest that ever married a Sue. It's ridiculous.
Is this the one that was she was Sasha in the Walking Dead series?
Oh, I don't know.
But she is on Walking Dead. The actress is on Walking Dead.
Okay, yeah. She was Sasha. So yeah. I just wanted to verify.
But the thing is, like, watching the show, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, this is pretty cool. We've got not only the captain or not only the first officer, it's the captain and first officer are both women. That's pretty cool. I like that.
And the navigator, I believe, was a woman as well.
Yeah, and that's all great. You know, although, you know, now that, you know, Michelle Yeoh gets killed at the end of the second episode, you know that it's going to be basically back to, you know, her interacting with white dudes. But
I'd also like to point out that they somehow had a member of Daft Punk on the crew.
What the hell?
I know.
What was that?
I brought that up because I just was like, okay, I don't quite understand.
Star Trek's up all night to get lucky. All right. Got it.
No, totally. But just to get back to this, like, this thing about her is, like, I like that there's this, you know, strong, capable female character, because we all know science fiction, fantasy, adventure stuff has not been in the pack for representation, right? So I'm all in favor of that. But to me, this feels like a condescending pastiche of focus group tested attributes. I mean, she is not a relatable character. She's great at everything. She's just like Rey in The Force Awakens, except that Daisy Ridley had enough charisma to put the role across and to make me like Rey and want to see more of her, even though she's irritatingly perfect at everything she tries the first time she tries it. I mean, even Luke Skywalker is kind of an idiot, you know, but not Rey.
Yeah.
Like, Rey is fantastic and perfect, because that's what I think it's, to me, it feels kind of condescending, but yeah, with this character, I just, like, I couldn't believe how the show just serves up one thing after another. Yep, she's right. Yep, she's right. Yep, she's perfect. Oh no, her big idea got her captain killed because her captain was too stupid to order a proper raiding party and decided it would just be the two of them. You know, so, like, none of it's her fault. She's right about the firing thing, probably. And so basically she's right about everything, and now she has to go to prison, but she was right. And it's like, it's dramatic poison.
Where was the consideration of her making those decisions? I didn't see any, there was nothing in her face that said, ooh, you know, I better not do this. This is mutiny. This is wrong. There was no point where I saw that happen. She's like, oh, okay, well, my captain's not going to listen to my advice. So, well, I guess I got to take over the ship. I mean,
it was crazy. Like, I just, it all felt very designed by committee.
Yes.
And trying to make it, you know, just like, you know, like Rey on The Force Awakens, we'll make her like that. And she's so much like that.
Mm. Only the dial cranked up to 11.
Right. She's like a parody of Rey, but there is no charm. Like, and that's the other thing. She is completely charmless. Like, I want her to fail.
Zero, I want her to fail. Charisma.
She's so horrible. There's nothing about her that I like. And you know, I want to like her. I like this idea, but I don't really like the idea because, oh, come on. She went to the Vulcan Science Academy and Sarek is her dad.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So that means she, like, to me, that's, fan service should be like a wonderful sneaky kiss when nobody's looking. And this fan service like this is like getting felt up in an elevator. You know what I mean? Like, it's so crude and so.
There's a crappy place for both, Tim. There's a place for both.
But this is so contrived. It ain't
the surprise, okay? That's what I'm saying. This is not supposed to be that kind of a thing. So that's my feeling, is just that it fails. If you got two full episodes to hook me on being able to tell interesting, thought-provoking stories and to give me characters who I'm going to root for, well, I guess I like Doug Jones, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty unhappy about that part of it. And the last thing I'm going to rant on, and Eric, I will definitely turn the mic over, but the Klingon redesign is a disaster.
Holy crap.
I mean, like, I didn't like the Abrams movies, but the design on those movies was on point. Everything they redesigned, I thought, looked great. And I could not imagine a more generic bunch of Stargate SG-1 looking motherfuckers.
Oh, yes.
They all got basically the same face, just in different colors.
Yeah.
And like that opening shot, right? Okay, when what's his name is making his very slow speech about I love cooking. And the camera does this loving, long, slow pan, like the first reveal of the Enterprise in TNG, right? But yeah, it isn't a glorious model shot. It's this really rigid-looking prosthetic that is like, God, can he breathe under there? Oh, yeah, it's got four nostrils. Okay, he can breathe. But the design, there's nothing recognizably Klingon about anybody on there.
Thank you.
Right? They're all wearing.
Not at all. If they didn't call them Klingons, I would never recognize them as Klingons.
No. And except for the main guy, almost all, and I guess the weird, like, hologram people who totally feel like the elders on the old Shazam TV show. Now I'm dating myself. But, and the weird hologram, everybody was wearing exactly the same costume, I think, but just in different colors. It was so weird, and none of it looked lived in. None of them looked like they lived in those clothes. If you look at the Klingons from the 80s and 90s, that was a good design.
Yeah.
They were hairy, and they were toothy, and they had expressive faces. They weren't like rigid rubber masks that you can't read any feeling through.
Right.
Did my voice muffle when I said rigid rubber masks?
A little bit. Did you wear a mask?
While I was minding it out, because I'm so in bed. Anyway.
Well, let me ask you.
It's armor. It's supposed to be armor, and it's so non-functional as armor because of its ridiculous design. It's just it's the worst design of any costume in any science fiction movie I think I've ever seen. I think I can safely say that.
Well,
I was
gonna
just
ask this,
appalled.
But before you take over, Eric, I got to ask this. I'm probably going to get ridiculed, maybe shamed a little bit if the answer is yes, but did they ever explain why the Klingons look like that in Next Generation and how they look different in the original series? Did they ever explain that difference?
Yes. And 24 tribes, and that's the whole entire basis of this plot.
Oh.
It's the 24 tribes.
All 24 look the same now.
Yeah. Just different
colors.
Huh.
But... Oh. They all look the same now, but none of them look anything remotely like Worf or like any of the Klingons that we saw in the original series.
Well, I
so I guess there were actually 26 tribes.
Yeah, well, I remember there was one time they talked about that in the they went back in time to the Tribbles in the Next Generation, and they made a comment about Klingons don't look like that. What changed? And he goes, "We don't like to talk about it." And that's all I ever remember hearing said about it.
I don't remember where I picked it up, if it was in one of the movies or one of the episodes. I think it was in one of Next Generation episodes, because Worf didn't look anything like the traditional.
Not really.
Klingons that we saw. And this was something the writers came up with so that they could do something different or interesting with the makeup. And I'm not going to be that judgmental about it. It's like, okay, all right. So they came up with this whole idea of different tribes and having different physicalities and so on and so forth. Okay. But the way that they used that to shoehorn this absurd plot, and this is the number one issue. I mean, I have a lot of issues with it. But
well, go ahead and take off with your issues. Okay. Let's hear them.
Okay, the number one thing is what this what these two episodes have done is to set up a war, or at least a huge, massive head-on conflict between the Federation and the Klingons. Okay, now the idea of a season of, you know, where there's open warfare between Klingons and the Federation is interesting to me, and I think it'd be interesting to a lot of people. However, like Tim was saying, and like a lot of traditional, you know, Star Trek lovers have noticed, it's more about the science. It's more, or as Tim said, the ideas. If you've watched a lot of Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, it's like taking each of those, or the best of those shows, is an idea. And they, you know, they put this idea and they fill it in with characters and the surrounding, and they tell a story that lasts 30, 45 minutes. And what Star Trek did is take those that same type of idea, but use the same cast and have a continuing narrative. It was brilliant. I don't know that they'd ever done anything like that before. So, you know, props to Tim, because he really put that into you know, focus. And they need to get back to that. And I, even though I obviously like the Abrams movies much more than you guys did, I admit that they're, you know, very, very flawed. And I, with each successive movie, I get a little more disappointed that they're getting away from, you know, they're not getting back to the science of Star Trek. Now, granted, there's always going to be a lot of techno babble on Star Trek. And one of the big problems that I have with the first season, maybe even two seasons of The Next Generation, is the amount of ridiculous technobabble that they use to justify these outlandish plots. That started to go away, and they started to actually use scientific concepts taken to a certain extreme. But that's science fiction. That's what it should be. Science fiction should be have its roots in actual science. And they, there's nothing in this new, these two episodes that even remotely, I mean, there's some techno babble going on, but it's just lip service. It's, I don't see this going in that direction. Now, the other thing is, and this is why I was excited to see this new Trek series, is at least the Treks that I saw, which is the original series and The Next Generation, both served as mirrors, they were steeped in our sociology, our nature as mankind. In fact, especially for the Next Generation, what is it to be human was like a central idea through the entire series. And you know, these are really interesting, deep ideas that they explored in a lot of different ways in a lot of different directions. But that's all been tossed out the window with this.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Add one thing to what you're saying, because I agree with you very much. I think Star Trek has always been a very aspirational series. It's always been something that is forward looking and forward thinking.
Right.
And that's what I've always loved about it. Yes. It had the first interracial kiss on television. Yes. It always had a lot of social issues at the forefront. And in this, we have Make Klingon Great Again. So in some ways, I think you're 100% right. I think it does mirror our society, and I don't like where our society is right now. So that's part of the reason why I don't really like this show all that much.
But really, though, those shows, like the original Star Trek show, was in a time of severe social upheaval. I mean, civil rights unrest at that point was probably at its peak in this country. And unfortunately, we're getting to that point right now very, very quickly again. But Star Trek was a show that gave us an alternative that said, you know, that put it in front of us, especially the kids. And I think that was the key. Is the kids are watching this and they're saying, look, there's a black woman who's serving as an officer on a bridge, and you know, no one has any problem with it. And these ideas, regardless whether they saw them, realize it on a conscious level, is you know, affecting who they are and how they think about people who are different from themselves. And The Next Generation maybe wasn't quite wasn't quite as key in our, you know, our sociological development, but I do think it influenced. I do think it influenced the 90s. I think it influenced a lot of the way that we think, and I think that it's definitely influenced all the science fiction, or at least a lot of it that's come since then. But where, you know, I love that you brought up, Tim, the Klingon great again, because I was like, okay, that's a really thinly veiled reference there.
It's pretty thinly veiled, yes.
And
oh, I didn't get it. Oh.
But it's an interesting idea. And if there was solid writing behind it, I'd be like, okay, let's see where this is gonna go. But
I agree.
There's been nothing that they've served up to me so far that made me even the least bit curious of what, you know, okay, if this is Trump's America, who is the Federation? What, you know, and here's another thing too. I saw the first two episodes, Tim did too. We realized this is a prologue. This is not what the show is going to be. No. In fact, the show, the ship is, you know, spoiler, destroyed, that they're all on, although most of the crew makes it off on shuttles. And the main character of Burnham is going to jail or going to prison because of her insurrection, her mutiny, as well she should.
Yeah, but as we've pointed out, she's such an amazing special snowflake that in the previews, it's shown that the Federation can't function without her, evidently. So she's immediately brought out of prison by the great Jason Isaacs, who I'm excited about being on the show.
Yeah, that's
I love that.
He thinks that's got me intrigued to see where they're going, because I do love Jason Isaacs.
Please let him have a series that isn't canceled after one season again.
Please.
Yeah, Awake was so cool.
He deserves better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is a top-notch actor. And we do know also that Saris, the alien that we all liked. Doug Jones.
Doug Jones
is coming back, so that's good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to give it a few more episodes. I'm very, very, you know, pessimistic that this is going to go anywhere. But like I said, this is a prologue. But a prologue is a wasted opportunity. The prologue should be what grabs you by the lapels and brings you in. You know, Tim and I were talking online about this, and Tim absolutely despises Battlestar Galactica because of where it went. And, you know, and I respect that. I wasn't as offended by it. But we do agree, though, that the miniseries that started off Battlestar Galactica was awesome. It was a bucket of ice cold water in your face. You're like, what the F? You know, Earth has been destroyed. What is going on here? I mean, you need something. After all of the Trek shows that we've seen, after all of the Trek movies that we've seen, here's this new Trek series. You are obliged to start it off with something major and massive. And okay, yeah, a war between the Federation and Klingons, that's massive. But
I was
going to
say, Eric, I think they think they've done that.
But they didn't deserve it. They didn't write it.
You know, I agree, but I think that they think that they did.
It's horrible that they think that they did, because that the fact that the Federation and the Klingon 24 tribes or whatever are now at war happened in such a lame ass way. It's just, I don't know. Maybe that was the point. I don't know, but I've just been completely disappointed by it. There's a lot of other things that I could say that I don't like about the show, but you guys have mostly covered it.
Can we talk about the editing for a second too? Because what happened? I'm not sure if I understood. Maybe the two of you guys can clear up the timeline for me, because there's that anomaly. She goes out in the spacesuit, lands on it, kills a Klingon dude, and then somehow that Klingon dude is on the ship being buried, and they're talking about her as if they know who she is and has been a bane of their existence for some time, and then she's on the ship in medical care. I'm not sure how this all shakes out. What's the order of this that happened? Because for a while I thought, oh, this happened a long time ago, because they're burying their warrior that she killed and now they're going to be after her. But no, this happened at the same time.
I didn't pick up that they knew who she was, and the Klingon, you know, the martyr who never shut the hell up the entire time he was in on the camera and speaking at a tenth of the speed of the Klingons in any other movie or television series.
Yeah.
He was preaching out against, you know, trying to build a case against the Federation.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear him saying anything about her, per se.
Maybe I was just lulled to sleep by his dialogue. I'm not sure.
It was very hard to pay attention to. It went on forever and ever and ever.
Well, maybe he needs to talk slower and louder.
Kudos to Doug Jones, though, because that man, you can bury him under layers and layers of latex, and he still manages to be expressive and alive in a way that nobody else on that show was underneath their makeup.
Yeah, well, think about all the different aliens that we've seen on Star Trek, and he's got this character that instantly is unique. I've not seen any character like that. It's not just the way his makeup looks, just the way he acts and his reactions. They're not human. Yeah, they're off. And I'm still not sure what to make of him. You know, what are his motivations? You know, he's an interesting character.
I agree. Only
one.
Well, you know, I think the best Star Trek series that's on TV right now is called The Orville. Well, I'll tell you what. It's not as bad as
I really don't want to have to like this show.
Well, I was expecting total campiness, just like Family Guy, Cleveland Show, you know, the rest of Seth MacFarlane's works. But it's not that much as you know, not as much as that. It's some good writing. There's actually some good science fiction in there. There's like one race of guys. All the race is male, and once every 75 births, there's a female, and they have to take it and get a sex change, and they approach that. I'm like, wow, that's a way to hit a current topic, and the way they did it was so cool. They brought it to trial, and you know, it's like, you know, they're pleading that, hey, you know, let her decide when she gets old enough, to whether to become male or female. Don't, you know, surgically alter her now. And then basically they lost the trial. They still surgically altered, but it brought together, you know, made people think. And it's like, wow, that's what Gene Roddenberry did back in the 60s. Made you think. But here, the thing is with this one, is that they add a lot of humor. It's not as crazy humor as Seth MacFarlane usually does, though. So it's got a lot of Gene Roddenberry's ideas about subtly teaching or throwing out something that's, you know, current events, like you guys were talking about civil rights back in the day. They're putting those in, but only they're throwing in with a little humor. And Seth MacFarlane has surprised me on this. And I'm really enjoying this series.
Oh, I got to say one thing, and I'm sure probably everyone who listens, or at least 3/4 of our audience, has heard this before, but the original Star Trek, Nichelle Nichols tells this story at all the conventions about she wasn't a Star Trek fan. She didn't know what she was involved with, and she really wasn't into it, and she was actually thinking about quitting. And I don't remember if it was a letter or if she actually spoke with Martin Luther King, who encouraged her to stay in the position because of the attention she was bringing to African Americans and African American women. Mm-hmm. And she never realized that she was, you know, an icon for that. And I love that story. And, you know, that just is so much of what Roddenberry wanted for his show.
Right.
And that's so much of what I was wanting for this show.
Well, watch The Orville, and maybe you'll see what I'm saying, because The Orville really, it'll surprise you. There's some silliness to it at moments. I mean, Norm MacDonald is this green, look like a booger thing, but I mean, that's weird, but the rest of it's pretty good stuff. There's some pretty interesting writing in this.
Well, I loved Quark, so I know that science fiction comedy can work.
Right. In fact, I'd say Quark. This is like, leans more towards Star Trek than Quark, but it has got the Quark elements in it. So, yeah. And
all right, I'm just going to say, Seth MacFarlane is the biggest D-bag that I've ever seen on in entertainment. I cannot tolerate that guy. And yet, you're probably going to make me watch this show. This is killing me.
Well, you know, if nothing else, like I said, the actress, I can't remember her name now. I've had it earlier, but she played Mockingbird in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She was... Adrienne Pilecki. Yeah. She was Jared Padalecki's girlfriend in Supernatural.
That's right.
Yeah, but anyway, she plays.
Which they got married, Adrienne Pilecki Padalecki. That would be pretty good.
but she plays the first officer. And the funny thing is, in this, is that they were married. She had an affair. They divorced, and he got command of the ship. And she's now on there to make his life a total living hell. But they work it. They work together, and they actually solve problems. And it's like, are they going to get back together? No. But it's funny to watch them battle. So, you know, it's a weird combination of stuff. I was totally taken aback by this because I expected it to be too funny, you know, for its own good. Oh, and speaking of which, Battlestar Galactica, you guys brought that up. I got to tell you this, just totally off the subject here. But last weekend, Sci-Fi did it was the anniversary of Battlestar Galactica on Sci-Fi. And so they showed the miniseries and then they showed the entire first season.
Mm-hmm.
I got my wife to watch it. And she,
whoa.
And I've got the entire first season recorded now. I've got the DVD set somewhere. I'm going to have to break it out, but she likes it. I finally got my wife to pay attention to something I like, and she likes it too.
Outstanding.
So
the thing about Battlestar Galactica 25th is it had the reputation of people watching it who weren't sci-fi fans.
Yeah, it's not old enough. It was some anniversary of like the original TV series, the one that with Richard Hatch.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, you're not talking about the remake.
I'm talking about the remake. That's what they showed on Sci-Fi. But I DVR'd it and got her watching it. Now, of course, when it comes to the end, Tim Coker, you're gonna be with me on this, I think. When it comes to the final season, she's gonna be let down like I was, but
I was let down too. I was a little more forgiving.
Because God is not a reason.
Right.
Yeah.
The answer of the whole show is because God.
Yeah. I was like,
okay, let's not relitigate that. Sorry, everyone.
They got totally lazy on that last season. That's all I can say. That last season should not have happened.
I actually am capable of giving a very detailed critique of the entire show that shows the cascading levels of terrible idiot plotting that starts to stack one on top of the other, so that with each half season it gets less and less credible and more crappy until by the end you finally are like, I just have to start drinking as much as these people. And everything is in scarcity except for top shelf liquor, where they must have a giant
I know right yeah Colonel Ty,
they never run out of giant beautiful bottles of brown liquor to drink.
Yeah, Colonel Ty had like thousands of bottles stashed, apparently.
Good Lord, yeah.
Oh, man.
That man was a professional alcoholic.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate him.
Yeah. I'm learning some tricks.
They're always looking for water, but damn it, they had alcohol.
Yeah. In fact, that was the last episode we just watched whenever all the water got lost because of bombs.
Yeah.
Boomer bombs. But anyway. Yeah. All right. We talked about Star Trek. We saw another thing. Now, this has been a few months past now because it took us all this time to get back together, but The Defenders finally came out on Netflix. We watched it. The entire series is there. If you want to watch it, trust me, I say watch it because it's still fun. Still don't have Danny Rand right. They don't have the Iron Fist right. There's something missing, and I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm hoping one of you guys can clarify this for me, but there's just something off about him other than he's a total douchebag. But, I mean, a rich, spoiled douchebag, but I don't. They just didn't. They missed something about him. But other than that, it was fun, especially that when the team was together. That was the hallway fights were abound. You know, just like those were the greatest. It was so cool. They just had bigger halls this time around, and I had a blast watching.
They were sewers instead of hallways.
Yeah,
I can't tell if you're putting us on or if you're telling the truth.
No, I had fun watching those big hallway fights. And the big sewer fight. I had a fun watching him. Because, you know what it was? It goes back to the times as a kid. Whenever I would, you know, TV, like, we had the Incredible Hulk. We had the Amazing Spider-Man. We had Wonder Woman. Look at those. It's like, you didn't get your superheroes on a regular basis like we do now. And so I'm still basking in that. Like, oh, there it is. I mean, in the 90s, we had that Flash series with the guy that plays the Flash's dad on the current series. As the Flash then, back in the 90s. And it was like, you know, all the campiness, all the cheesiness in that series, I still was like, the Flash is on TV, you know? And I kind of, that's kind of how I am with the Defenders, because I never thought I was going to see the Defenders on a TV show. And so I made myself have fun with it. Again, though, I wish they would have got the Iron Fist right, because I think that would have made the world a world of difference in the way this series played out. But they got me hanging on the edge, finding out what's happening with Daredevil now, though, so we'll see what happens. Okay, let's talk about this. Has everybody seen the series Defenders?
I have not.
What? Did you watch any of these?
I've just hit that moment of superhero fatigue. I agree with you. You're 100% right. We have superhero movies and shows coming out of our butts now.
Yeah.
And I think we have reached the point where I'm like, I'm just not in the mood to watch one now. And I never really thought I would get to that, but I really have reached that point. I'm like, I finally watched two episodes of Iron Fist, and it turned out to be kind of what I was told, that it was a little disappointing. Not awful, but just not that great. And I just don't have time for not that great anymore.
Well, the Defenders is better than that. I can say that much. But
Well, I've heard that. But, you know, honestly, there's been a Spider-Man film. There's a new X-Men TV series coming. There's... that other
Inhumans?
Inhumans thing, which looks like, oh my God, I can't even begin to talk about how little I care about that. but really, it's just hit that saturation point that I'm just...
It sounds like someone's boxing a microphone.
Yeah, who's tap dancing on the microphone?
That's Tim Coker.
Oh, sorry, I should mute. I'm working.
I thought he's drum rolls to everything we're saying.
I can't believe someone would try to earn money while we're here goofing around. I'm insulted by your industriousness.
Anyway, go on.
No, I've gone on it plenty, believe me.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm with you. There, that superhero fatigue is coming, but I'm still enjoying it. I mean, I don't know. We got a Justice League movie coming out. We got a whole bunch of things that I thought would never happen when I was a kid. Now they're happening, and we're able to critique them. And I'm still excited about it. So it hadn't hit me yet. Hopefully it doesn't ever. But I can understand where you're going with that, Tim. So, well, Eric, you saw The Defenders.
Yeah, and I still haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming.
What?
In fact, I haven't seen the past four Spider-Man movies. Oh, wow. I stopped after Sam Raimi's third movie, and I just have never gotten back into it. So I am going to definitely watch Homecoming sometime soon here to get caught up. But that was out, you know, when I had my accident, so I couldn't get out to the theater. And so I just haven't gotten around to watching on video yet. But Defenders, okay, you know, I think out of the four of us, I probably despised Iron Fist more than probably the rest of you. I mean, I watched it all the way through, and I was like, okay, it's got to get better. It's got to get better. And it never did. I didn't just dislike Danny Rand. I disliked his, the guy and the girl that were his partners, in this whole thing. I didn't like them as people. I didn't care about them. I was actually kind of hoping that one or both of them might die off. And Danny Rand is just, ugh. I don't understand. I mean, I have to assume that the Danny Rand, the Iron Fist of the comic books, is a very different character. I do know, you know, I realize that the character in the comics is, you know, rich and he's white. But I have to believe he's not such a spoiled douchebag.
I don't remember him being that ever.
I don't like Danny Rand, but the interesting thing about the Defenders is by the end of it, I didn't hate Danny Rand quite as much as I did when I started.
Yeah.
Well, talk about damning it with faint praise.
He's better. He's at least more tolerable in this, and doesn't act like such a douchebag as much in this as he does in the Iron Fist. And he is a key character sort of in the plot, which I had heard going into it, and I was prepared for the worst, but he doesn't F things up, It's really is an ensemble piece, and that is what I appreciated about it. Again, this has always been a sore point with me, even with the first Avengers. I feel that they actually start wailing on each other while there are, like, you know, evil mother effers like surrounding them to be the most unrealistic thing in the world, and it really takes me out of it. There were a few of those moments in here, and I was just like, come on, guys, really? You're trying to kill each other. Well, okay, it was the moment when they're trying to keep Danny from leaving the building, because they know that the hand wants Danny as a key of some kind, and they're behaving logically, and Danny's behaving like a douche. And, you know, basically messes everything up because he doesn't want to sit put. But I mean, they have this huge fight. Mainly it's him and who was it? It was him and Luke Cage mm-hmm. that were going at it. And I don't know, but there were some of most of the arguments that they had, I could buy into because they're different ideologies. And that's what made me like the show is, well, Drew Goddard was the director or producer. He was the showrunner for the Defenders, and he's also the showrunner for the first season, maybe the whole series of Daredevil. And I think that's why I liked it. I like writing. I like okay, here's a good example. In the very first episode, I believe it was the first episode, and we see Daredevil. We haven't seen Daredevil for a while. The last time we saw Daredevil, he had quit the life, and he was just going to be a lawyer. That was how he was going to serve humanity.
Right.
And he just wins this court case for this kid who I think it was supposed to mirror the Detroit water thing and all the kids that were poisoned by the horrible pipes there. It was something like that. I don't remember the exact circumstances, but the kid's in a wheelchair. He may never walk again. Matt Murdock gets him like an $11 million award out of the case. And he's giving the kid some advice, and he's like, he's basically saying, look, he goes, you know, enjoy the moment while you can, but you may never walk again. And you need to you need to face that as a reality. And you've got to realize that, you know, from here on out, people aren't going to understand where you're coming from. And of course, what he's doing is he's also explaining his own position in society and how people won't understand where he's coming from and how he himself is misunderstood. But this is like in the first 15, 20 minutes. And I was like, oh man, they're like blowing some of their good stuff. Like in the first 20 minutes of the show, this is going to be something worth watching. And there were a lot of moments like that throughout. And that's just it. The action isn't what sold it to me. I liked a lot of the action scenes, but I've seen it all before.
Right.
It was the character moments. And this is the thing that the Defender shows, the Netflix Marvel shows do that the movies can't do, is this the character death. They actually have the time for the characters have this downtime and actually talk about who they are and how their goals in life differ and what they have in common. And I found it to be a much more, at the end of the day, by the end of the series, I found it much more believable that these four people would band together as much as they had personal issues with each other. I found it much more believable than the Avengers, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to agree with you. Now, one thing I thought was going to happen with that, getting them together, so to speak, getting the band together, was the Night Nurse was going to be the sole force bringing that in.
Yeah.
And she was, but there was something missing from that too for me. It's like, okay, she got them back together or got them all together, but she didn't keep, I don't know. There's just something missing from that they could have added more to it. But again, though, they got together. So it didn't matter what it was as missing it as it turned out. But you're right. I think the their coming together and fighting as a team was a little more believable than the Avengers. But then again, they're more street level heroes than the Avengers are, of course. So they're more relatable. Maybe that's a lot of it too. But
Also the Avengers are defending the entire world,
universe. Yeah.
You know? Whereas these guys, they're defending their home turf. This is where they live. You know, these are the people that they live with. You know, and that makes a big difference in the stakes and the reality of the feel of the shows. I really did overall like it a lot, and I think that the reduction of 10 episodes to 8. Had a lot to do with the success.
It's good to see that
for me of this season.
It's good to see that Marvel and Netflix are listening to this podcast. So
exactly. Right. When are they putting us on the payroll? That's the question.
Oh, you guys didn't get your checks?
Are you garnished? Oh, just kill.
They bought T-shirts.
Nice.
All right. Well, Tim Coker, what'd you think of the Defender series?
It is a mixed bag for me. I'm getting a little bit of superhero fatigue too, which is kind of impossible to conceive. But you know, it's like you said, Tim. Like, there's so much out there, and not to mention that I am, by my very nature, compelled to trawl through stuff that you know was made in 1915. You know what I mean? So. Yeah. Like, there's all that competing, and something's got to be really good. And I've got to say, like, I'm losing faith in the Marvel Netflix process because I thought Daredevil was great the first season. I thought the second season was pretty lousy. It started strong and got lousy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Jessica Jones was the best one they've done that first season. I thought that was magnificent. I thought Luke Cage was really great. But, you know, Daredevil season two was, I thought, weak is a very nice word for Daredevil season two.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that Drew Goddard is barely involved at this point. He show ran the first season of Daredevil and then stepped away, and two other guys took over season two of Daredevil, and those are actually the showrunners of Defenders. Drew Goddard, I think, is just an executive producer because he created the first Daredevil series. I don't think he has anything to do with it anymore. And that, to me, that like, it's not as bad as Scott Buck, who I'm going to, you know, we all, those of us who suffered through the painful death of the last half of Dexter, you know, probably all of us have somewhere in our home a dartboard with Scott Buck's face on it because he was the showrunner of those seasons. And he was the showrunner of Iron Fist. And again, I think he completely missed all the possibilities with that show. All the pleasures of Iron Fist to me were peripheral ones.
Yeah.
Supporting characters and things like that. But the real problems I have with Daredevil with Defenders are that I really love, you know, the Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage characters. And whenever the three of them are on screen together, I'm generally pretty happy. And I liked watching their side characters interact. Like, it was kind of interesting to me that almost nobody on this show with somebody who hadn't been in the previous show.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I'm a little tired of Claire at this point. You know, like, I liked her as Night Nurse and it was cute and everything, but seeing her like go along to China and take part in the action,
that was
Iron
weird.
Fist and this, yeah, I kind of don't want to see her doing that. I kind of feel like Rosario Dawson is a big enough star that she can say, hey, come on, I want to get on the action, and they do it. Maybe I can't really say why it happens, but. You know, that's little stuff. What really comes down to for me with Defenders was that the big surprise of it was how much I enjoyed Sigourney Weaver in it. Because with me, Sigourney Weaver is only as good as the show she's in. And with this show, I felt like she really, really rose above it and did great work every scene she was in. She has so much natural authority that it was just one of those genius casting moves that Marvel is capable of pulling off, you know, like Tommy Lee Jones or like Robert Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges for that matter, you know, like occasionally they put just the right big name actor in a certain role and it just seals the whole deal.
And it's like magic. I mean, it really is.
It is.
You know what? You're right.
But that's what I'm saying is that, you know, Defenders is a mixed bag, like I said, and there are real pleasures to be gotten from it. You know, I think that Jessica Jones has a ton of great lines in it, and I love watching Jessica Jones just walk in and, you know, come out with some really sharp retort and just basically take a huge dump on somebody. I love that, you know. And there's good Daredevil stuff in it.
It is basically season five of Hallway Fight, the series, but but
this time
it's fun to watch him interact. But here's my problem, okay? And I got into this with Iron Fist, and I'm going to get into it again. Ninjas are freaking boring, okay?
They're so boring.
when Daredevil, when Frank Miller was doing Daredevil, I was there. My brother brought home, just by chance, he happened to start buying Daredevil the month Frank Miller started drawing it, you know? And I was there, you know, reading those as they happened. And you know, ninjas started showing up in comics at that point with that and like with Wolverine comics and things like that. And in the 80s, which I would remind everyone was 30 years ago.
God.
But think about that. It's been 30 years since ninjas were interesting. 30 years. And now they're just a thing. Now, they're not an uncool thing, but they're everywhere. And martial arts choreography is everywhere. And you have to do something really special, okay? One of the ways that I felt like Luke Cage fell down was that the fights weren't super interesting. They weren't bad, but they weren't super interesting. Like in Daredevil, the fights were super interesting because you had a sense that these are human beings with physical bodies that feel pain and get tired. And you could see that exhaustion growing as the fights go on and things like that. And you really had a sense that this guy is putting himself on the line, fighting any way he knows how to save that kid or whatever. And you know, and the second one, when Elektra shows up and brings with her a whole army of ninjas, suddenly it's basically like Arrow, and you're just watching all of this fight choreography. As I always call it, it's kung fu fancy dancing.
Yeah.
There's nothing dramatic about it. You're just watching these. It's like the lightsaber battles in the prequels, in the Star Wars prequels, where there's nothing exciting about it because you're just watching stuntmen who have worked really hard to learn a routine.
How dare you mention the movies that shall not be named?
Oh, sorry, everyone. Well, the movies that shall not be named. But that's what I'm saying is kung fu fancy dancing is not different. It's everywhere. If I wanted kung fu fancy dancing, I'd watch frickin' Arrow, okay? Yeah. Like, and it makes me really, really sad because with Daredevil, there was this sense that they were onto something. And with Jessica Jones, hey, you know what? She doesn't really fight that much. And when she does, she can flip a car over or whatever. But Jessica Jones, her problems were not soluble with punching things.
Right.
So she did a lot of fighting. And that made that show different. And with Iron Fist, one of the problems is that the martial arts stuff is really undistinguished in that show, I thought. And in this show, I would say even more so. So when Sigourney Weaver exits the show, very disappointingly for me, you're left with just a lot of fight choreography and a lot of kind of canned situations and a reveal of what the hand has been after that is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in a lifetime of reading comics, watching science fiction, and making up my own terrible stuff. I mean, it was, so I don't know, maybe a C. It's not as much of a disaster as Iron Fist was, where I would give Iron Fist a solid D, but it's not encouraging, and it doesn't make me excited for whatever they're like. Oh, I know why I'm not excited for their next series. It's the stupid Punisher. So
kidding.
Well, before we get on ninjas altogether, let me recommend go watch this Ninjago Lego movie. Ninjas in that, okay, they're not so much, but it's yet another charming Lego movie. I was told I went in there last weekend just to see. I'm like, okay, I'm hoping they do it just like Lego Movie and Lego Batman. And Isaac kept telling me, no, the series was a pretty serious series. I don't think it's going to be what you're expecting. And we got in there, and it was charming. Jackie Chan just melts your heart. You got a lot of fun. There's cool Lego fights. That's not so much fancy dancing.
All right.
But so before you give up on ninjas.
Do they fight in hallways?
Yeah, and they don't fight in hallways. They fight in the jungle. In fact,
I don't want to see anything.
Jackie Chan's character plays on the flute, Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. And it's like right at the end, he hits that last note. Isaac and I are like, what is that song? And then, Welcome to the Jungle. But anyway, it's don't give up on ninjas yet. Go see Ninjago, the movie. And then you can give up on ninjas after that.
All right, you got it.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's one of the things that when I had the Brett from the Crossover Sports Podcast, talk about the Iron Fist and others. He said it looked like actors doing martial arts that they'd never done before. And, you know, it's just a bunch of dancing. And, like, yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. And so hopefully, what is it, Infinity Wars, the whole bring it all together, will bring us into another era of superheroes where they're going to have to find other things to do. So maybe that'll all bring it to a head. Well,
and give us. You know, that's a really great question. Where do they go from here? I mean, what do you do after you have the culmination? Avengers movies with the Infinity Stones. What happens next?
I don't think any of us expected him to have to answer that question, but here we are.
You're right.
I mean, I don't think it's running out of steam before they're out of Infinity War story to do.
I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is going to want to stop making movies, these movies, one someday.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, there's lots of source material. They could, you know, maybe we get a Secret Wars.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they've surprised me before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually genuinely would like to know the answer to that. I'm very curious as to what might happen.
Yeah. You know, it's a great point. It's like all we can do is speculate because after you do all that, wow, what can you do other than just tell a whole bunch of individual stories?
I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Black Panther movie. I think that's,
me too.
That's the next really interesting thing for me is that I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about Thor Ragnarok only because it looks like it's going to be a real comic book movie. It's going to have a lot of fun to it. And in fact,
I agree.
I saw World War Hulk and I'm sitting there watching this. And I'm like, oh my God, that's from the trailer. That's on Thor Ragnarok trailer. That's what, oh, okay, cool. They are bringing World War Hulk into this. So it ought to be interesting. So, well, I think we've done it for the night, guys. Oh, but I got an announcement to make. And this may be good news. This may be bad news. We're out in the public. Who knows what can come about from this. But we got invited by the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo in Bloomington, Indiana. They do this every year. It's a really cool little small little mini con that's just one day. And It's a lot of independent artists and lots of toys. And it's just $5 to get into this thing every year, and it's just a blast. Well, this next year, they're going to have a podcast section, and we got invited to be one of the podcasters there. So we're going to be hanging out with a bunch of nerdy people on a con day, and we're actually going to host some panels and all sorts of fun stuff. So, guys, we need to get together for this.
Super keen.
I would say so.
Cool.
I think it's a fun thing. And it's Bloomington, Indiana, so it's somewhat of a central location. It's, you know, just south of Indianapolis. It's about an hour, or about 2 hour drive from where I am. You guys, a lot further. Especially you, Tim Mattson. So
that's all right. I'm willing to make the drive.
So, well, you got a year to plan. So, but yeah, I think it's going to be fun. And I'm going to do my best to get a whole bunch of t-shirts and just sell them there at the convention or at the expo. So we'll, you know, we always tell people to go online to buy them. We'll actually hopefully have them right there at our booth. So, I think we'll have a good time. We're going to be recording some podcasts while we're there and, just having a good time. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but YouTuber Pixel Dan, he does video reviews of toys and, I've met him a couple times there. He's there every year and he's really a fun guy to hang out with. There's people called Nerd Therapy and, they're just, they kind of do what we do, but YouTube. And they're another fun group of people. So we'll meet some fun people out there. So, that's next year. I can't remember the date exactly. I think it's like August 26th, somewhere around in that time period. But we'll keep posted on the Facebook page and the website and let everybody know. So I'm hoping you guys can make it in for this. You got a year to plan for it. I'm going to be there. I'm there every year anyway. So... All right, anybody got that anything else to close out the show with? No?
No.
I guess we've worn it all out. So let's do this. Let's, let's call it into the podcast for tonight. Let's see here. First of all, make sure, speaking of the t-shirts, go out and buy the merch. Go to nerduppodcast.com. Buy those beautiful t-shirts. Seriously, you know, I always kind of joked around, said it makes you look cool. People will ask you questions. They do. I wore the t-shirt out and someone said, "What is that?" I'm like, "Oh, it's my podcast." oh, which one's you? So it's kind of neat, but it's I get to explain the podcast to people, and people we got more listeners from it. So, but I just love it because it's a great design. And, you know, thank you, Tim Coker, for that, by the way.
What I was going to say, what talented artist made that design? Tell.
You guys.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, Tim, maybe you can have some artwork to display and or sell at our booth next year at the Toy and Comic Expo. So,
I think that young man has
potential. I'm working on it.
That would be neat. Yeah, yeah. He's got some talent. I'm glad whoever,
I think he does.
Whoever brought him in on this was a genius. I don't know which one of you guys did it, but...
I don't know. I say we keep him, though.
Yeah.
Aww.
But, yeah, it's a really cool design, and, hey, it's all over our logo. Get the shirts. Support the podcast. Other than that, hey, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter, at Gil Wilson.
And I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I am Tim Coker, and you can follow the adventures of my two Sharpays on Instagram at Oakbark, OAKBARK.
Oh, and I'm easily I'm easily distracted by shiny objects. My name is Tim Mattson, and you can find me at Tim Gone Mad.
All right. Well, that does it for the podcast tonight, and we'll see you guys next time. In the meantime, like we say at the end of each and every episode, stay
nerdy. Nerdy.